I'm learning that communication is the most important thing with memberships, transparency and communication. A lot of members felt that things were being done in the board level and would trickle down, that a lot of times the board, not necessarily this board, but just the board in general in the past 10 years, would maybe have a specific agenda and that they weren't listening to their members. And I feel like this is not just for ACAP. I feel like for every organization that I've ever talked to, it's always been members want more transparency and more communication. So I feel that that's the main thing I've gotten from the listening tour.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Celia Zamora, Executive Director of the American Council of Academic Physical Therapy, or ACAPT. Celia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Celia, tell us about ACAPT.
Sure. So ACAPT is a small staff, small but mighty, trade association made up of academic institutions that focus on academic graduate physical therapy programs. So technically our membership are the institutions and not the faculty, but of course the faculty, program directors, and clinicians that are involved are all part of ACAPT and we serve them.
So Celia, is physical therapy as a program offered at pretty much every university in the US or just some of them?
So right now we have about 270-ish programs and they are constantly growing. So every year we are getting word of new programs, but it's not commonly found in every institution, I guess.
Celia, with the population aging, is physical therapy as a profession growing?
It is. It is growing. And I think that as we see more things, for example, now pickleball has kind of come up recently, and now we're starting to see a big increase in pickleball-related injuries. So I feel like there's always injuries in terms of sports, in terms of regular aging, but also just with any activities that people do. So physical therapy is going to be one of those fields that are always in demand. An example, it's always going to be in demand regardless of what happens with AI. So that's definitely one of those things to think about, especially for any younger listeners thinking about what career they need to do. That will always be in demand, anything in healthcare, really.
Celia, when our office was in Alexandria, our landlord was the American Physical Therapy Association. So how is your association different from an APTA, for example?
Right. So ACAPT actually was part of APTA originally. We have only really been around for almost 11 years. And so then it was started by a group that realized that APTA focused more on the individual, so physical therapists, as well as even the physical therapy educators individually. But then they wanted to start talking about the groups themselves and the institutions and the programs. So that is where ACAPT then was able to branch out and now became its own 501c6 11 years ago. So we focus again on the institutions and what composes that institution, the program directors, the clinicians, curriculum, admissions, things like that.
I see. Well, it's clear that we got a lot to talk about today, but before we do that, let's talk about your journey. So how'd you get to become executive director of ACAPT?
So it's a really interesting story. So up to almost 5 months ago, my entire career was in world languages. So I was a world language educator in K-12 setting, as well as in private and public universities. I was a researcher, I was an academic, and then I went into my first association role about almost 7 years ago, which was the American Council of Teaching Foreign Languages, ACTFL. There I started off as a senior manager of quality assurance and certifications. And then I was promoted about 4 years ago to the director of professional learning and certification. When I got that role, I figured, well, I guess this is where I'm going to die and retire because this is the pinnacle of my career. I mean, what else could a linguist and a language specialist do? And then I was introduced to the world of ASAE, and my previous executive director at the time, he encouraged me to apply for the DELP program, which is the Diverse Executive Leadership Program. So I applied to that program and I got in my first year, and then my entire worldview shifted because I realized that you don't have to be of the field of that particular organization to become an executive director. So I've met people who were part of, you know, gynecologist associations and they themselves were not gynecologists, or they were in prenatal care and they were not mothers. So that really shifted my view of everything. And then I started really getting involved in associations. I became the CAE Registered Provider Committee. Now I'm vice chair of the ASAE Research Foundation Committee. So all of these different things really started opening my mind. I got my CAE and then I realized, oh, this is what I like doing. What I really like doing is leadership and organization and operations and empowering staff. So then little by little, I realized that's what I wanted to do. So when I decided that, it took a year for me to finally become an executive director. It was just interview after interview. It was always getting to the very final interview and then going with somebody else because that other person had been an executive director. So I think at some point, eventually I said, well, where do these entry-level executive director positions exist? Because I feel like I've always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Right.
And in my last interview, my final interview where I didn't get the job, I was really defeated. And the recruiter said, well, there is one more association that I think you might like. So I applied to that one thinking I wasn't going to get it. And little by little, I started going through the interview process and I found that I really liked it. I really aligned with their values and it ended up being ACAPT. But the funny thing was, and what I always kid around that what got me the interview is in my final interview, I said, although I am not a physical therapist, I am physical therapy adjacent because I run a lot of marathons. And here is my KT tape from the last marathon I did this past weekend.
Oh.
So if it weren't for all of you, I wouldn't be able to do what I love to do. And I think that's what kind of got me the job.
So you think maybe it was like the personal connection that somehow you appreciated the profession?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, let me ask you a question. So prior to working at ACAPT, you really were working with world languages. You have a PhD in applied linguistics, right?
Yes.
So you were really part of that world. And so now you're in something totally different. What's that shift like mentally to be leading an organization and focused on the association, not necessarily the subject matter that the association is devoted to? What's that like?
Yeah, I think that really plays in to my strengths. When I took the Strength Finders, one of my top strengths was woo.
Let's provide some background here. So there's a book from Gallup, right, called Strengths Finder. I actually really love this book. And there's like a little test that you take.
Yeah.
And they tell you what your top strengths are. And there are no weaknesses, just strengths.
Right.
Okay. And so your top strength was?
Woo.
Woo?
Yes. Woo. Like woo.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But it ends up meaning winning others over. So then my top five strength finders all have to do with either extreme competitiveness or relationship building. So it was really interesting because I am a very competitive person, but I'm really good at being able to find something in common with almost everybody. And I feel like that's what's made me very successful in all of the things that I do. Back to your original question, what I've really focused on in this role is the relationship building, because I feel like I have to work twice as hard now to tell people that although I am not one of you, I understand you and I see you and I validate what you're saying. And I want you to be a part of this organization because I see all of the great things that you're doing. And even though it might not be world language oriented, we're all kind of in the same boat. We're all academics, we're all educators. And although the content might be different, the context and the barriers are all pretty similar. And I feel like that relationship building has really gotten me through a lot of sticky situations in my new role.
I bet having the PhD gave you a lot of credibility. It's in a completely different field, but you are talking to other PhDs. And as my coach likes to say, kings like to talk to kings.
Yes.
So you might be from different fields, but you are all doctors. I bet that meant a lot to them.
Oh, 100%, especially researchers, because I used to be I still am a researcher. So I understand data analyses. And when they're talking to me about the Center for Excellence, which is all comprised of data and quality assurance, I can speak to that. I can speak to the fact that we have an institute on research and they feel a little deflated right now. And so then I can help build them up because I know what it's like being in that. And I know exactly what kind of validation and what kind of empowerment they need to continue doing the research. So again, different content, but context is really the same.
Okay, so if woo is one of your strengths, will you share a couple more?
I don't remember exactly what it was called because I've taken a few since then, but it had definitely something to do with competitiveness, achieving, relationship building, and positivity. So it was a really interesting mix.
That is a real interesting mix. And I bet it makes you really qualified to lead an association.
I believe so, because at the heart of the association, it's people. We just had our board retreat this past week. And I was explaining to my board that the board is the head. They have the eyes for the vision, the eyes for the future, the brain. They know where we're going. And they're the mouth. They're the ones that are speaking on behalf of the organization. Then you have the body, which is the staff. So they're the heart of the organization. They're the ones that had the legs and the hands that get the work done. And then you have the executive director as the neck that kind of moves both of them, connects them, intertwines them. So it's really interesting to kind of have that dynamic. So I feel like I have a very strong neck to get this done.
Well, that is a beautiful analogy. Let's turn to ACAPT. You know, during the prep, you said that I'm the second ever executive director of ACAPT.
Yes.
And I bet that's an interesting transition point for the organization. So what's that like stepping into the shoes of basically the founding executive director, the person who really shepherded it through its first decade? What's that like and what are you bringing to the organization?
Yeah, so it's been really interesting because having had things done one way for 10 years and having just one perspective for 10 years, then comes somebody brand new. And those first few months, it really is just a listening tour. It really is. Okay, what has worked? What can be improved? What are some things that didn't go well? Versus going in there and saying, oh, this is not how this works. Let's change everything. Because I know people don't necessarily like change, especially when something has been solidified for 10 years. Also, when something has been done by only one person for 10 years, especially in a small staff, you tend to have to understand how they process things and kind of their way of thinking. So their way of organizing the budget, their way of being able to even just look at the desktop and see how things were organized. It's just really kind of having to go into someone's brain and understand how everything works. So that's been a little bit of a challenge, but I feel like I would probably be really good friends with her if I met her now, because I feel like I understand how her brain works. In terms of what I bring, I think I bring a lot of innovation and new perspective, especially an outside perspective, because my predecessor was from physical therapy education. So I come in bringing something completely different, even just looking at our founding documents, and I'm really good at organizing. So just starting to create processes, procedures, guidelines that didn't exist, looking at all of our foundational documents and seeing if they are accessible to a second language English speaker and making sure that it's not a lot of jargon, making sure that things are really looking towards the future in terms of our younger members and in terms of members that will be coming up in the pipeline. So it's just a lot of innovation and a lot of moving parts of not focusing on the last 10 years, but focusing on the next 10 years.
Celia, how do you navigate the need to think about the future, but also honor the legacy of someone who really is the founding executive director? And you want to make sure that you're not kind of stepping all over her legacy and saying, you know, that was terrible, but things have to change. How do you navigate that? Is that political at all?
Oh, for sure it's political, especially with people that were colleagues of hers that are still around. So I think it really is back to that relationship building. It's meeting people halfway and meeting people where they are. You know, if something needs a little bit of fixing, whether it's because the pricing structure wasn't done well, or maybe things were just done, but the return on investment was never really talked about. So then it's a matter of meeting with those stakeholders and saying, okay, well, here's what I need in order to make this successful or sustainable. what is really important about this project that is a non-negotiable for you or that you're willing to be open about it. And then really just kind of meeting people halfway and saying, okay, well, we can't continue doing it this way because it's not sustainable, but we could do this, this, and that. And usually because people just want to be listened to and they want to feel that they had an impact and a voice, I feel like people tend to be a lot more receptive to change when you're meeting them where they are and when you're validating their feelings. And a lot of times it is feelings, right? It is emotions of, like you said, my legacy. Well, we're going to continue to honor that, but maybe just in a slightly different way so that we can both feel that we're winning.
Different times call for different conditions and different activities, right?
Exactly.
So you say that you've been on a listening tour. What does that look like? Are you traveling? Are you Zooming? What are you doing? And what are you hearing?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Especially being in a lot of Zoom meetings, I've been attending all the task force meetings, institute meetings, meetings with new members, and now more importantly, meetings with members that did not renew. And just asking them and having those really difficult conversations of, well, I'm not here necessarily to win your membership back because I don't know if that's possible, but I do want to hear what didn't go well. Why do you feel that you weren't able to renew your membership? And what could we do to eventually win you back or to at least show you that we have changed and that we're new and that we're willing to work to get your membership back?
What are you learning?
I'm learning that communication is the most important thing with memberships, transparency and communication. A lot of members felt that things were being done in the board level and would trickle down. That a lot of times the board, not necessarily this board, but just the board in general in the past 10 years, would maybe have a specific agenda and that they weren't listening to their members. And I feel like this is not just for ACAPT. I feel like for every organization that I've ever talked to, it's always been members want more transparency and more communication. So I feel that that's the main thing I've gotten from the listening tour.
So what are you doing to increase in communications with members so they feel like they understand what's happening to their association?
Well, one of the first things is we have something coming up called the House of Delegates, where APTA has this massive program that they present motions and then they vote on it. So instead of just going in there as ACAPT saying, well, this is what ACAPT is going to promote or support, we held a town hall for all of our members to tell them, well, these are the motions that we are concerned about. We want to hear from you what you think we should do, or we want to just hear your opinions. And based on those opinions, that will really influence what we say. And our members were essentially on the same boat that we were, but it's just different because we asked them and they told us and we heard them. And that's exactly the message that we're going to say in the House of Delegates. Apart from that, we created an online community and we're starting to see a lot of engagement there in terms of sharing best practices, commiserating, providing monthly updates. We're providing like a blog of what the staff has been up to. We're again being very vocal and present in all of these volunteer meetings. So again, just that real transparency of what we're doing and what your membership is getting you.
Well, that's really interesting. So you're basically saying that at the House of Delegates, you would have taken positions that the membership was already in alignment with.
Right.
But by doing the town hall, you now have validation of your positions, and you also get to say, we heard from you.
Right.
Had the town halls not been happening before?
They have, but in just different capacities. And I think that it wasn't necessarily this, and it wasn't as maybe engaging or organized. So sometimes it would be just the same stakeholders speaking. Whereas in this town hall, we made sure that we gave an opportunity in small groups for everyone to speak. And then we sent out a follow-up survey asking them, if you weren't able to voice your opinion, here is a survey that you can now voice your opinions as well. So we were able to really kind of triangulate data from all over.
Love that. Hey, let's turn to something different. You've got your Physical Therapy Education Leadership Conference coming up in October, and I know you're really excited about that. Tell us why.
Yes. It's a chance for me to, for the first time, really to get to see our members because my second day on the job, I went to CSM, which is APTA's massive conference. And a lot of ACAPS members, of course, are members of APTA. So they were there, but they were around. They were sporadic. It was thousands and thousands of people. This is the first time that I will really be able to engage with the members of my organization.
Plus, this is your meeting.
Exactly. I'll also be able to talk to all the volunteer leaders that I've been meeting online. I'll be able to host our first business meeting. So that's exciting. And then really present our brand new strategic plan, all of the documents and all of the processes that we've paused for a second in order to get our ducks in a row. So it'll just be like a really brand new ACAP that we're presenting. So last year at ELC, at the Education Leadership Conference, they celebrated the last 10 years. So this year we're celebrating the next 10.
Ah, beautiful. With a new executive director.
Correct. Yes.
Let's turn to something yet different. During the prep, you talked about expanding globally. What does this mean? How do you do it with a small staff? And what a way to tie in your previous background.
Yeah, so I feel that something that has been missing with ACAPT is really just reaching out across the pond or across country lines and saying, what's working for you? Because we have physical therapy education across the globe. And I don't think we've done a really good job in really solidifying those relationships. I know there have been some small groups that do that. So what I would like to do in the next few years is really have a presence. I want ACAP to have a presence in these global communities so that we can share best practices, so that we can share what's working and what's not working and sponsor each other and just really lift each other up, especially because as a global community, you know, we have physical therapists that transfer over here or that ours go to another country. So how can we make that pipeline and that bridge so that any professional that wants to go to a different country to be able to do physical therapy education can, and that it's pretty much similar.
Are there some countries around the world that are pioneering new physical therapies that you can partner with or that you want to learn from?
I'm not 100% sure, but I do know that there is a conference in Japan that one of our members will be attending. So I'm really excited to hear what she brings back from that.
Okay, so 5 months into the job, what do you hope to accomplish in your first year?
I really hope that my staff feels empowered. Before, the staff was just kind of doing things as they needed to. They were very reactive to whatever was going on. And now their titles have been updated to really reflect their job descriptions. I'm really investing in their professional development. I'm empowering them to make decisions and to be the voice of ACAPT. So I really hope in the next year that I see incredible growth from them. Apart from that, I really hope to be able to finally have that beautiful strategic plan that everything just falls into place. So all of our travel policies, our budget, everything now has a clear and concise process of, does this align with our strategic plan? And if it doesn't, it's a not right now project, versus before we were doing so many different things without a vision that you can do anything, but you can't do everything. And we were trying to do everything. So everything was being done at a mediocre level. So now I really want us to shine and focus on like these four priorities that we have.
Well, Celia, congratulations on the new position.
Thank you.
It sounds like you have an amazing year ahead of you, plus a new strategic plan. We'll have to have you back.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.